Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, actor impressionist Chris Cox talks about making a rap video about George W. Bush that almost landed him in jail.
The lyrics to this rap about George W. Bush started just flying into my brain and my pen started moving. It was like I didn't even know where this was coming from. We're about to do this safety test, and we knew we didn't have like a big window just because, you know, highway patrol or something's gonna come by and we don't have permits. The next thing I know, one car, two car, three cars, lights blaring. They're coming from the op, like they're coming from like over my shoulder. This is not good.
Today on Storyworthy, actor Chris Cox tells the hilarious story about shooting the Curious GWB rap video in Washington, D.C. Stick around.
Hey, this is Chris Cox, and you are listening to Storyworthy.
Hey, this is George W. Bush. You're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. I'm so glad you guys tuned in today, whether you're a longtime fan of the show or a new listener. Welcome to Storyworthy. I hope you guys enjoyed the story last week from impressionist and voiceover artist Rachel Butera. And interestingly enough, I know that you know her, Chris Cox.
I know her well.
Isn't that interesting? So I have back-to-back guests that know one another. So I got to tell you that her story was fantastic. I'll tell you that right now.
I'm getting set up here. It's a takedown.
No, it was really interesting. The topic was death, and we've had that topic before on the show. I've had guests bring that before, and it's not necessarily a downer conversation. It's just trying to be like, you know, we talk about birth, well, we talk about death. I mean, it's just part of life. And anyway, she's super entertaining, you guys, and boy, oh boy, what a talent. She does some amazing impressions like Wanda Sykes, Whoopi Goldberg, Sarah Silverman, Rosie O'Donnell, Joan Rivers, Jodie Foster. She does everybody.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and she's a regular on Howard Stern. And you know, when she does those voices, Chris, it's so effortless for her.
It is. Yeah, you don't see or really hear the strain. Sometimes if you listen to I'm also an impressionist, when you hear someone doing an impression, it'll be good, but you can still hear some of the effort, and you'll hear them a little bit in there. But with her, you can get lost in it. She's amazing.
She's really,
there's
really
a reason she was able to, you know, go from, you know, she was working like a desk job in New Jersey, then she won the Howard Stern Impressions Contest, and then she went, boom, out here, and she's a working VO actress.
Right. Anyway, you guys, go back and listen to Rachel's episode of Storyworthy, but not now, because today I'm here with Chris Cox. And like you said, you're another impressionist, which is interesting.
You're on a theme.
Another voiceover guy.
Yes.
Do you have a studio in your closet?
I have an actual booth.
Oh, nice.
A lot of people do record from their closet.
Yeah, that's where I do. I do.
Yeah. And I had a rig. I made my own rig many years ago. You know, got some like soundproofing and hung it from the ceiling and crouched in a corner. You know, everybody has their story. And then finally one day I was like, you know, since this is my job, at this point, I think I can afford to actually invest in my career. And it's paid off in spades.
Our story today is how to mock a president and not get caught. And interestingly enough, you're not talking about Trump.
No.
You're talking about this video that you made with President George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before social media.
Pretty much.
So it was 2004, 2006.
Six, yeah. I think Facebook had probably just started, but nobody over 22 knew about it. Because I think Facebook kind of came around 05, 06 or something like that.
Yeah. Well, you guys, real quick, we're going to talk about this video for a second. But you guys, so you know, you can watch it over at YouTube. And you'll find it under Curious GWB.
Yes.
And I want to hear your story in just a second. But I also want to show you my new bag. Look at this bag.
It's beautiful.
Is this so beautiful? It's a Dagny Dover bag. And it's in this beautiful blue color called Pacific. And I have to tell you, get your wife this Dagny Dover bag. You know why?
I do know why, because I want her to stay with me.
Well, that's for sure. But also, I know your wife is a very busy lady, and I know that she has so much going on in her life. So what we have here are these Dagny Dover bags, and they are designed with purpose and intention. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, they seem, here's what it is. They have an aesthetically pleasing quality, but they also seem sturdy, like they can take
well,
a trip or two.
I'm not going going to throw it around or anything.
No, I wouldn't throw it around. But if you happen to drop that thing, you're not. It's not going to, you know.
Here's the selling point. Seriously, yeah, for me, was the selling part was not only the structure of it, because it stays really nice.
Yeah, it does. It's rigid.
Not rigid. It's soft, but it is. It's structured. So you can really feel confident that it looks good. But also inside, it's got all these compartments, right? So there's your lipsticks.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
There's my pen. There's my tissues. There's my story-worthy bookmarks.
Yes, yes.
You know, people don't even read that much anymore, and I got bookmarks.
No.
And also, I've got the smallest tote. It's called the Petite Tote, and it's designed to take me into the evening. Do you know what I mean by that?
It's a transitional thing. It's transitional, like lenses. Or a relationship. You can have your daytime boyfriend and your nighttime boyfriend. They don't have to meet.
You guys, you got to check out dagnedover.com/story. That's dagnedover.com/story. And use my code STORY. You'll get 20% off your order. So Chris, get your wife a bag. Would you do that?
I will do it.
Wait till you see the colors too. The colors are fantastic. All right, you guys, Chris Cox is here right now. He's an actor and a writer and an impressionist. And your IMDb page, dude, goes on forever.
Yeah. By the nature of it, voiceover actors do have more credits because it's quicker turnaround.
Yeah.
You just go and record something, boom, you go record something else. You know, you shoot a movie, it takes months.
And you guys have heard Chris on television shows like Family Guy and Lost in Oz, and in a number of video games, including Batman, Gotham by Gaslight, Marvel vs. Capcom, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, Guardians of the Galaxy, yes.
Of course. The Telltale series,
mm-hmm.
Lego Marvel's Avengers.
Oh, yeah. I was in the Avengers Earth Mightiest Heroes. It was one of my favorites because I got to play Hawkeye, who is, you know, everybody has sort of their cartoon character that's sort of the most like them.
Yeah.
And Hawkeye was the guy that I really clicked with.
What did he sound like?
I mean, he sounded close to me. You know, I mean, you know, I would just sort of say like, "Hey, Green, you ready to go yet or what?" You know, he was heroic. He was
a total
hero. Cocky, yeah. And he was kind of a little bit he was part of the group, but also a separatist. And that's me.
Yeah,
I'm a little bit. I'm part of it, but I'm also just a little bit off in the corner.
There's
going
on.
There's
a lot of authority in that voice. You also voiced a character in the feature film Ted. That was really great.
No, actually, you know what's funny about that? I was actually, that's one of my few on camera things. I know it's confusing when you look at my, it's all voiceover good, but here's how I got it. Seth MacFarlane, Family Guy creator and producer. For many years, supported, you know, loved having me come in. We got to know each other. So he kind of, I'm going to say, threw me a bone. I mean, I auditioned.
But he said, hey, yeah, you should come in and read for this.
Would you like a small part? So I got this really fun, and it was literally the day after my second daughter was born. I was at the hospital with Amanda, my wife, and I was so exhausted. I turned to her, and imagine this. Now I look back. I mean, think about it. I mean, look, I have just a small piece of this, but I still get residual checks.
Yeah.
Ted was a phenomenon. It was the highest grossing R-rated comedy of all time. And I was telling her that day, I don't think I want to go do this tomorrow.
Oh my gosh. I mean,
that also shows you like what kind of insanity you can be in after a childbirth. Like, that's crazy. That would have been a really bad decision. Forget about me just feeling like I didn't want to do it. That's like career suicide.
Yeah,
hey, I'm going to just let this major motion picture know I can't show up because I'm really tired. They would have probably given me a break
because
on some level.
Because of the baby. Because of the new baby.
I mean, he did say when I showed up, he's like, hey, Chris, good to see you. And I was like, He was like, I said, hey, I just had a baby. He's like, why are you here?
Aw, that's so sweet.
And I was like, because I want to do this.
How many days did you shoot? Just the one?
Just the one day.
Yeah, so you had to be there.
Yeah.
You had to be there.
It was a one day filled with a lot of interesting things, including hearing Mark Wahlberg about two doors down in his dressing room going, no, I mean, it doesn't matter when I'm a script. We got to direct. Well, I don't care. Let's just shoot it. Like,
sort
of deal. And it was just clear to him that the, you know, all of the little nuts and bolts didn't matter. This guy was a mover and shaker. Let's just, whatever it is, let's just shoot it.
Yeah. It's so LA. Oh my gosh. I love that.
That's, you know, he's a guy that can do that. Hey, let's just shoot it.
Did you record Horton and the Quagger Bug?
I recorded, how do you know about?
What do you mean? How do I know?
Wait, that's not on my IMDb,
this
right?
This is called a little pre-production value.
I recorded a bunch. I am the official, I guess, voice of Dr. Seuss ebooks. So like when you go onto your iPhone and you download a digital format.
Yeah, that's audiobook. Where I got it off Apple Podcasts. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah,
that's so exciting. Now, I did want to try to find you on Twitter and I couldn't, but I did find these two Chris Coxes on Twitter. And you tell me if you're either one of these.
Oh, I already know. I got to go.
At Chris Cox NRA.
Right, the executive director of the internet. That is not me, but I am well familiar because his middle initial is even the same W.
Wow. Or are you at Chris Cox 121? And his bio says, follower of Jesus, husband, dad, trying to live like Jesus with my heart set on forever.
Okay, that describes me to a T. So I should be him. No, that is not me. My wife is Jewish. Not that she would have a problem if I declared that I would want to follow Jesus to that extent. But
Where are you?
I am at Chris Cox Vox.
See? Oh, V-O-X.
See? V-O-X, that's voice,
okay.
right?
At
that's
Chris like Cox Latin Vox. Oh, I love that. Very nice. Yeah. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Chris Cox.
In the winter of 2005, going into 2006, I had just come off of a TV show called Free Ride with my then writing partner, Matt Sloan. We were writing on that show. And on that show, there was a gentleman named Kirby Hayborn. And he was a really funny guy. You've seen him in a million commercials, blonde-haired guy. He was also in the Three Stooges remake, or the Three Stooges movie they made not long ago. I had an inspiration. I had seen the Lazy Sunday video on SNL, and it had just come out, and it had hit this thing called YouTube. I mean, I had just seen it. I thought, hey, I would like to make a parody of that, because I saw someone else make a parody based in LA. So I called up a friend of mine from college, Matt Bardos, and said, hey, would you like to shoot this? Yes. Kirby, would you like to be in it with me? Yes. We go out to Muncie. We shoot this video. It's a big, it's really funny, and it was viral, which at the time, it just started. So off the success of that, Lazy Muncie is what it's called, rap video in my old hometown of Muncie. Off the success of that, I literally think we were flying home, and I started getting notions of another video I would like to do. And this time, my sights turned to politics, because I've always been interested in politics. So I got home, and it was that week. Lyrics, you know, musicians talk about how songs come to them and lyrics start pouring out. The lyrics to this rap about George W. Bush started just flying into my brain, and my pen started moving. It was like I didn't even know where this was coming from. And as you know, corny as that may sound, I mean, it really is the case. It's not really happened to me with a musical thing I've done since. It just was unbelievable. It was like some weird channeling thing. And I just started flowing with this, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to shoot another one of these really quick, and I'm going to fly again to another location. This time it won't be Muncie. This time it'll be Washington, D.C., and I will rap as George Bush. And it was it was not meant to be a complete sort of political statement, but at the same time, I didn't want to back off. I had my opinions about things, and at that point, the country had kind of come to the conclusion that where we were at in the Iraq War was not the best place to be, and there was a lot of negative views of what was happening, and so I just kind of wanted to do some satirical spoofing there, and so I wrote Curious GWB, called Matt again. Matt said, I'd love to do it. This time, though, in Lazy Muncie, I was just me, and my friend Kirby was sort of we were Abbott and Costello rappers in that. This time, it was just going to be me solo, and I was playing George W. Bush, and I didn't want to look like me. I wanted to look as close to George W. Bush as I could. Well, it just so happens, many years before that, I had done a really early in the internet days, a series called The Clinton Chronicles for a company that was called Media Trip. And I played Bill Clinton. And they pulled out all the stops. They got me a makeup artist who was the makeup artist for Mad TV. And her name was Jen Aspinall, extremely talented. She'd also worked on SNL. So I called her up. I still had her number. And I said, hey, Jen, I know it's been a while, probably been 6 years since we had done that. I said, you know, I need to look like George Bush, and I need to look like him in the next 2 weeks, because this is on a fast track, you know. The production schedule is tight. She said, well, I can't do it because I got the Mad TV thing going. I can hook you up with another makeup artist. She goes, but I can get you the wig that Frank Caliendo uses for his George Bush on Mad TV. So boom, there we go. Off to the races. The wheels are turning, and I'm like, this is a go. So I get on the plane with Matt and the makeup artist, a guy named Jim, who was really, really great guy. And that's pretty much it. It's a two-person crew,
and me, the quote unquote star of the video. Now I have a friend, a mutual friend of Matt and I's, went to college with him, named Ray. Ray had recently moved back to D.C., his hometown, from L.A., where he had come out with all of us. We came out from Ohio University, and he said, "You guys can come here. You can stay at my place, or rather, my dad's place. It'll be fun." Well, this is the cool thing about Ray and his dad's place. Ray's dad was Jim Kimsey. He passed away a couple years ago. Great guy, really, was larger than life guy. He was the co-founder of America Online. So Jim Kimsey's house wasn't just a house near D.C. Jim Kimsey's house was a $70 million mansion with like 15 bathrooms. It was palatial, and it doubled for us as the White House parking lot, because we had this, we had this scene where I get in a limo, and I'll get there in a second. But anyway, so this was working out to be quite the production when you consider that it's just me and, once again, Matt as the wonderful director of photography, in the shoestring budget, flying out to D.C., and now suddenly we're going to be staying in this this mansion. Well, Ray's dad also had a fleet of limos. Very convenient, because, George Bush rides in the presidential limo. Arguably, Ray's dad's limo, which was a Bentley, and a special Bentley limo, stretch limo, that's like, I don't know, maybe a handful in the country. I mean, it was arguably nicer than the president's. So this is insane. All of a sudden, we're getting like, I'm like, this is turning into a real thing here. Like, what the heck? So we go there. We set up shop. And Ray's dad had this driver, this Vietnamese driver, a lovely guy named Bhutan. And he met us at the airport. Really great guy. He ended up being our chauffeur for the entire production, like driving us around in this limo through D.C. So we get there, we set up shop, and then it's like, okay, first day, we're going to go out, we're going to do our shoot. Well, the first hint that maybe things weren't going to go quite as smoothly as they had seemed with all of this buildup was when I sat down in the makeup chair and we put on the wig. Now listen, I've never met Frank Caliendo. And I had kind of tried it on loosely before we came out, but not really. I was like, yeah, it looks good. But like, there's a difference between that and like really fitting it and sitting down and really getting it right. And it was, I was like, I'm pretty particular about these things. So I was like, I don't know if this wig's gonna work. I thought it looked a little more like Frank Sinatra than George W. Bush. But it was fine. It was fine. I mean, it was okay, but it was just that little ping. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like I'm like, okay, it's a little ping. Okay. But things are okay. Things are okay. Nothing could go wrong. We're just goofing around. So we all get in the car. I'm all made up. And once the makeup was on, and then it started to pull together, and I was like, the wig's fine. And whatever. What was that? It's just some, superstitious little thing. I was feeling the, jitters of first day shoot. So we go out and we start shooting, and we have a couple of locations that we're doing, and then we're like, okay, I had this scene where in the song I say, "Go on, critical ashes, go on and judge. I got my spin doctors, MCs Limbaugh and Drudge. Don't blame me, the intelligence was cruddy." Like, don't blame me for Iraq. The intelligence was cruddy.
Yeah.
So I had this vision because I knew George Bush's father was the head of the CIA, and they named it after him in his honor. A lot of people don't know that it's like the George Bush Center for Intelligence. Yeah, absolutely. George Bush Sr. is named after him. So, and I asked Ray, I said, "Hey, do they have a sign?" I said, because, that would be really funny if I say that, the intelligence was cruddy while I'm standing as George Bush in front of the sign. Now, it was a highway sign, not like we didn't go onto the property of the CIA. But Ray said, yeah, they got a highway sign. So we get in that limo, we drive down. Remember, it's me, it's Matt, director of photography, it's James, the makeup guy. And then Ray stays back with Bhutan in the car around the corner. And this is a highway. I mean, this is a pretty, it's a busy thoroughfare. And we are, I couldn't even tell you where the front gate of the CIA was. I don't know. But we are standing now at a highway sign that's like, you know, George Bush Center for Intelligence, next right or whatever, which I thought was funny too. I was like, wait, shouldn't they like not have a big sign? Like, it's the CIA. Maybe this should like, you know, you should have some kind of transponder that, you know, a wormhole opens up if you know where you're at and then you can go in and whatever. But there it was. So I'm standing in front of this sign. And in this moment, the ridiculousness of all this is really hitting me. I can't believe people are driving by. They must be going, what the hell is going on? There's a cameraman. There's a makeup guy with a fanny pack. And there's me looking like George Bush standing in front of this sign going, don't blame me. And the intelligence was cruddy. And this sign's behind me. But we got the shot, you know. We say, oh, let's do a safety take. We're about to do this safety take. And we knew we didn't have like a big window just because, you know, highway patrol or something's going to come by. And we don't have permits. The next thing I know, one car, two car, three cars, lights blaring. They're coming from over my shoulder. So like they're not coming towards us. We're on like, you know, the side of the street where if you're driving, you'd be on the right. They were coming on the other way. They flip a bitch and come. I mean, a fleet. And I'm like, holy sh! Like I just went, you know, that wig moment, that little superstitious tick. Like, I don't know, something's a little off. All of a sudden, it was flying back at me. I'm like, this is not good. We're standing on the side of a freeway, and now I have, like, countless... I didn't even know if they were police. I didn't know what they were. I assumed it was Washington police. They get out of the car, and I very quickly realize my assumption as to their exact... or the force that they were with was wrong. They were not, you know, D.C. police or whatever. They were federal officers for the CIA. They were like the CIA's, like, you know, henchmen. They get out. I mean, if you've seen, like, you know, Sicario or any of these movies where you have like guys with like, you know, sunglasses, Oakleys, and you know that, you know, reflective and black, and they get out with like AK, you know, 15 or AR-15 assault rifles, right? And I'm like, just. I mean, I'm sweating bullets, and they have bullets in those guns, and they're walking towards us. And all of a sudden, you just sort of think, this stupid little idea that I came up with on the plane ride back from that other stupid little idea and blah, 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 has now led me, I'm going to be imprisoned, and maybe I'll be waterboarded. Because aren't they the ones that did the waterboarding? I think so. They come up, and I mean, I look over at the makeup guy. Now, he was a former Marine. So in some weird way, in that moment, I sort of looked at him and was like, I didn't say anything out loud, but I was like gazing into his eyes very intensely going, do something. You're a Marine. Stab them with a makeup brush. Help me. I'm going to get shot. Matt, like me, was immediately, you know, we just both acquiesced. I don't think we're warriors. Like, okay. They come over and they just sort of look at us and they, you know, they were clearly 20-somethings, maybe early 30s guys who had, you know, they had done a few tours of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq. They just dripped off of them, that feeling. And they held the rifle so comfortably. I was like, oh, these guys have been holding this for a while in more dangerous situations than this. So they sort of go, you know, like, I think they've been pretty much, hi, what's going on here? And me, I suddenly turned into Woody Allen. I'm not kidding. I was like, because the guy was pointing the gun just a little too high. I said, I'm sorry, could you just point the gun just below my knees? Was that possible? Because, you know, a foot I can spare, but, you know, a thigh is important to my ambulatory nature. You know, I really did. I asked him, could you please? I mean, what a ridiculous, but I, you know, which probably proved how innocent we were, because somebody who's guilty and more cynical, yeah. Like I was so innocent and dumb. I was like, could you not point the gun that high? It scares me. So they pointed the gun down. They took us. Now, this is what's interesting. They took us individually to ask us what our stories were. Wow. Smart, right? I'm like, wow, this is like, an episode of Law & Order SUV or something. Like they got, you know, because they wanted to make sure it lined up. Now, as they had been driving towards us, we all had a mini huddle. We're like,
And even before we started shooting, if you said we knew the chance of us getting caught by someone, we just figured it'd be like some museum officer or something would be like, okay, this is just a project. It's, you know, college. I think we said it was a college project. Like we were in grad school. I was like 30 something at the time. Like it's ridiculous. You know, it's just, or just, oh, it's a home video. That's what we said. So it's just a home video. I mean, like really? You're just shooting a home video with a makeup guy and a boom mic or whatever. And you're standing on the side of the road. So they took us individually. And I mean, I remember Matt and I in particular were like, man, this is really fucked up, man. This is really screwed. This is really breaking down, you know? And luckily our stories lined up and they let us go. I mean, I'm telling you, I was convinced we were going down. Wow. They let us go. Now they said, do not film on any federal property around. Like just don't do it. Now, when you hear that and people are holding the AR-15, you don't only internally say yes, you externally say yes, and you say it politely and, you know, whatever. So we said, oh, yes, absolutely, absolutely. Not 30 seconds after they drove off, did all the fear and all the, you know, the negative feelings about this, and oh my God, we're like, okay, so we'll just get one take at the Capitol Blade. We'll just do it in one take. So we drive, because we did, we had to, and I was like, you know what, the project must go on, right? The show must go on. I'm like, we cannot. I was like, you know, as soon as they go, it's like, boom, they're gone. So now we're back to it. And Matt was a little worried. He's like, I don't know, man. I don't know if we should do this. I'm like, dude, you don't even have to get out of the car. I will be, you guys just drive by. I'll sit on the, on like a wall in front of the Capitol building. I go, this is an important shot. So let's just do it. So we drove down there and we got that shot really quick and I hopped back in the car. Now this is where it gets interesting or more interesting. I hope it's been interesting. I literally jumped back in the car and we started driving. And the next location we were going to do was in Georgetown at the site where they shot the Exorcist stairs, yes, where, you know, the father falls down the Exorcist stairs. And we were just going to do, it wasn't even really part of the music video. It was supposed to be like, we were going to have, you know, like if you ordered the DVD, this is the DVD extras. Like just like, it was ridiculous. Like even the notion of why, like, I mean, what, that shows you how early it was in the viral video stage. Like they don't, I mean, maybe now they do, but like we were doing it and we were thinking a DVD, like you get DVD extras, we'll have extra bonus clips. So it was just me. The idea would be funny is George Bush standing at the top. He was going to give a tour of DC and this was one stop where he would say, hi, I'm George Bush and these are the Exorcist stairs. That was it. That was the bit. For better or worse, that was the bit. So we're driving to that location. And we get there, and while we were driving, Ray, I remember, he like kind of half-joked, but not so half-joked. He was like, yeah. He's like, man, you guys see that car? That's kind of like, they're probably trailing us or something. He was just joking around. I'm like, yeah, right, they're trailing us. So we pull in. Now listen, the Exorcist stairs, really nondescript. It's like there's like a gas station there. It really is, the movie did an incredible job of you know, movie magic of making it seem like a place. It really, it doesn't look like that. So it's like going to South Fork Ranch for anybody who's been to Dallas. I mean, it looks like, you know, like a suburban house. So we get there and I go up to the top of the stairs and I'm doing some takes. Now it's really far. So I had to like shout down to them, was that okay? And Matt would like just hold up his thumb, you know? So we're doing takes. And all of a sudden I see this guy walk up and Ray's standing there. My buddy Ray, you know, co-producer now on the shoot and master. And there's this guy like talking to Ray. I can't hear it. I'm too far up. And I'm just like, oh, that's weird. I figured, oh, he's just checking out what we're doing. And then I look at Ray's face and it's kind of serious. And then I'm kind of like, and then they kind of are both, you know, they're not necessarily paying attention to me. Matt's kind of half shooting. And I'm just like, oh, no. And then the guy walks away. And then I'm like, do we need another one? They're like, no, I think we got it. So I come down and I'm like, we got it? And it's like, yeah. And I go, so who was that guy? And Ray goes, that was a CIA agent. And I said, are you sure? He goes, 99.3, like he's, I said, what the hell? He goes, well, while you were up there, this guy came over to me and said, so what are you guys shooting? And he goes, I towed the company line. I said, oh, it's just a, you know, it's just a, home video. Really? What's it about?
And Ray goes, oh, it's just, you know, just stupid, just kind of sketch kind of thing. Oh, no, but like, what's he doing right now? Like going like the grade. He goes, and while he was asking, and so he was asking, and Ray glanced down and he saw his jacket kind of open up a little bit, and there was the emblem for the CIA. And Ray goes, wow, that's a cool jacket, nice shirt. He goes, you probably can't get that at like a gift shop. He goes, oh no, no. You know what I mean? And like, it's just, the guy was just really, like, he was smooth. He was cool as a cucumber. The CIA agent would let him know, you know? He's like, he would probably, look, he had a lunch break. They said, listen, these guys are a bunch of dill weeds, but just follow him anyway. So then, and I was still up there. So then the guy goes, so what's he going to do right now? And Ray goes, oh, he's just going to say, I'm George Bush and this is the exorcist. So then I did a take. And I remember the guy was kind of watching it. So I did the take and the guy turns to Ray and he goes, oh, that's funny. And then he just walked off. So we got away with it. We didn't get caught, but we were damn close, I think, to being maybe like taken into the CIA. If just maybe just to fuck with us, I don't know.
You guys are so lucky that that guy didn't communicate to the other CIA guys.
Like, that we had continued.
Yeah, like, hey, did you, you know.
He clearly got it. He clearly was on our trail. We all agreed that he had you know, followed us somehow to the Capitol building.
Well, it just seems like that whole fleet of cars pulled you over the first time underneath that road sign.
Yep.
What kind of road was that, by the way? It was a highway?
It was a highway. It was like a Midwest, or, I mean, I'm from the Midwest. It was one of those like Midwest or Eastern Sea, but not like out here. You know, there was a grassy median in between, like big grassy patch. So we were on the grass. It was like a super thoroughfare. It wasn't like, you know, 5-lane highway,
and it wasn't a city either.
No, it was like suburban McLean.
So when all those cars came, I mean, right then and there, don't they have communication going like, we are pulling over some people that we suspect of something or other.
Yeah.
And then wouldn't other CIA people in the area hear that? Isn't it like a police
thing? Oh, I absolutely believe that when they were doing that, look, anytime there's that many people carrying that many weapons of that caliber, that's not a silent operation. There were other people that knew. I mean, they must have spotted us. There had to have been a camera.
So what was this? What do you think they were most offended about? Like the camera and what you were doing, or the fact that you were dressed as Bush?
I don't know that they were even. They weren't necessarily offended. I don't think they cared about. Listen, first of all, I should share one little comment. So when it started, once the tension starts de-escalating, when very quickly, probably when I said, please, you know, please put the gun down, please point at Loa, they were like, oh God, these guys are rank amateurs. Well, then it turns to them just having fun. It was almost like being hazed by guys that were younger than us, probably closer to being out of college with weapons. And now we're the old guys from like, what's the Will Ferrell movie school? Old school. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was like
we were the old guys and they were the college guys. And
they were the cool ones.
Yeah. And they were like, so, wow, George, this would be George Bush. And they told Matt when they were interrogating him, they go, so like, he's supposed to be George Bush, really?
Like they didn't think it was.
Remember the thing about the wig? Remember how I told you there was that little. Yeah. So I think if you believe in spirituality and energies of the universe, that my little premonition was like, they're not going to buy this. And they didn't, I think they didn't quite buy, because he said to Matt, he goes, I've met him. He doesn't look like that.
That is so funny.
Because they, you know, they work there. They've met the president.
They see him every day and they have to have a very close eye on him.
Sure.
So they know. That's really funny.
Yeah.
So I want to understand this idea though, that you're driving around in a limo, or was it a Bentley, or...
It was a Bentley limo. I didn't even know they existed. So, like, imagine the most incredible.
How much
Bentley.
Does that car cost? Hundreds of thousands.
I would say. I think. I may have even asked Ray. I want to say $250, and it was tricked out, man. I mean, it felt like, you know how the president's limo, which is, I believe, a Cadillac or maybe a Lincoln now. It's like really extra thick.
Yeah.
Like this was like that. Like wow. Like the doors, you know, you felt like you could put them on an Airbus.
I mean, I understand that this was a really rich guy because he co-founded AOL. Yes. So he had all the money in the world. But why would he have a car like that? I'm just curious.
Jim Kimsey was a larger than life guy. He was, a guy who, you know, he came into that money a little bit later in life, so he really appreciated it.
And he
you know,
spent
that was
it.
A watershed moment.
I see.
You know what I mean? And he was like,
AOL.
Screw this.
Yeah.
I got, you know, I'm in my, I think he was like probably in his 50s when they really started hitting, maybe.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so he, you know, and he and his wife, Ray's mom, had divorced many years before. So he was footloose and fancy free. He had hundreds of millions of dollars. He built this incredible mansion. Here, here's a little side note. He was, he dated the queen of, Queen Nora of, Lebanon or something.
Wow.
Or not, is it Lebanon? Yeah, something like
that's
that.
Random.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, he was,
almost
because
like a royalty thing.
Yeah.
In a way.
Like a whole thing.
Yeah.
He dated for a little bit. He dated like Bo Derek. And in fact, they, this is crazy. This is crazy. So while we were there in that house, you know, he was always having dinner parties or going out and bringing people back. Bo Derek. Now they weren't dating at that time. They kind of, they were still friends. She comes to the house.
Wow.
And this is after our first day of shooting. This may have even happened that day. And then we came back and there's Bo Derek. He introduces me. And I'm like, oh my God, there's a woman who, when I was in my teen years,
that
was like.
That would have been amazing to get her in the video. And you just saying, you know, a 10.
It would have been. I don't know that she would have agreed to do it. She's a pretty staunch conservative.
I was
going to
say, she's a conservative.
She's a conservative.
So that's interesting. Yeah.
So she asked what we're doing. He's you know, Ray's dad. He was always really into my impressions. He loved my impressions.
Yeah.
So he, and he had a very deep voice. He'd be like, do your Bush for him, you know? And I'd be like, I'd say, Mr. Derek, it's very nice to meet you. You know, I watched 10 many times. It's a great piece of film, you know? So she, here's what she does. This is what's amazing. So we're in that moment. There's Ray's dad and then like the co-executive vice president of the Washington Redskins and then Bo Derek and me and Matt. She gestures. I'm gesturing towards you like, come here with my index finger. She gestures me. Come here. And I'm like, is this a Mrs. Robinson moment? Am I like, did I really impress her with my George Bush? She wants me to come with her, not just like over to separate from the group and go 15 feet down the hallway. And maybe into a door of a bedroom. I don't know what's happening, but I'm sure as hell not going to resist this. I go down to the hall with her. And suddenly, I'm standing 15, 20 feet away from the group with Bo fucking Derek. And I'm like, and just, you know, life hands you these moments. Life hands you lemons. You're like, what kind of lemonade is this going to... Not, no. Life is handing me lemonade. And I'm like, what kind of... extra,
well, just what is happening?
What
because
is going on?
You guys
on. So,
were having the craziest experience.
The whole crazy, already with the crazy experience. Now I'm standing with Doda. She goes, so, she goes, your impression. And I'm like, I've already gotten knocked by the CIA guy who decided I'm not a terrorist. And who says, well, he doesn't really look like
so
that.
She didn't think you had a good impression.
I didn't know where this was going. She's your impression. And I'm like, I'm just stealing myself. Or actually, I'm just sort of like, are you fucking kidding me, Bo Derek? Like, you got to be kidding me. Suddenly, I went from like, what's, I didn't have reverence. But I was like, oh my gosh, Bo Derek. To like, oh, are you fucking? So she goes, it's good. But you're missing the turkey gobble.
Oh my gosh.
And I go, I'm missing the turkey gobble. She goes, yeah. I just went to the White House correspondence dinner. And there was this guy, I don't know, his name was Frank Columbo. I go,
oh my gosh.
I go, Frank Caliendo. Comes back to the wig. You see how it's all tied to the
gosh,
wig?
That is so funny.
And she goes, yeah. And he does this. And he did. Frank, you know, look, everybody has their little tell thing that they pick up on. And that was what Frank did. But I didn't, you know, I mean, I did sort of, you know, you see, I do sort of cockeyed. I tilt
your
his head.
Head
because that's what he does.
Forth.
He does, you know, I just didn't do as an exaggerated. It's just a different thing. But she was giving me pointers based on what she had seen Frank Caliendo do. So I had to then do, I guess, what was the walk of confusion. A little bit like... Fuck you, and then shame back to the group.
Did you tell her that I was wearing that wig? I'm wearing his wig.
I you know, I think I just nodded and said, oh, okay, thanks. It was such a surreal moment. I couldn't give it anything more. I was so stunned. I just gave it...
When did you find out that you were going to have access to that vehicle?
To Bo Derek?
I'm back at the car. Like, when did you know you were going to have access?
Well, in other words,
it didn't matter at all. In other words, your friend Ray just says, you guys, I know this sounds crazy, but I have this Bentley limo, and I can use it all day, and I've got this limo driver, and this Vietnamese guy, and he'll take us wherever we want to go. Is that what happened?
I mean, it wasn't too far from that. When I first thought of the... Oh, and I made a mistake. Ray was not... I don't think Ray was officially back in D.C. He was still, I think he came out with us. He then ended up going back very soon after. But,
yeah.
But he, no, he just said, listen, you know, and again, his dad, what I loved about his dad, he was cantankerous is the wrong word, but he could be a little surly, like you never quite knew if he was going to, even to his own kids, was he going to give you what you needed and what you wanted, you know? Because he was an army guy, and I think he had a little bit of that army kind of like, yeah. You think you earned this, soldier? So Ray was like, look, I think I can get us the limo, but I don't know. So we went out there not really knowing.
Yeah.
And I walked in that garage, and he showed me this fucking limo. I was like, are you out of your
mind? How many cars are in the garage?
Oh, about four. They weren't all Bentley limos. There was a Bentley limo, then like maybe a Cadillac limo. Yeah. And then other just Bentleys and whatever. But when I saw this car, I kind of knew. I was like, you know what? This thing is going to go well. And ultimately it did. These are just little, these are the bumps and scrapes along the way.
Well, when I watched the video, you're dancing, you know, in so much of the video, and you're rapping. You rap so well. You really do. Oh, for such a white guy.
Yeah, totally.
But did you have on earbuds? Did you hear the song, or did you, like, how did you match it so well? Or did you just sing it in your head?
We did it. So we did it low rent. We just took, like a boombox. And so I did sing it live along with my own track. And then, you just take out my live on set voice, and we just used the backing track. So yeah, ultimately it comes off like a lip sync. And by the way, part of it, I just remembered, we shot on the Haywood or the Hayfield Motel, which is across from the White House. We were on the roof testing fate, because while we're up there, I mean, I remember the hotel people, they were like, yeah, you can do it. We go to the top, you know, there's nothing between us and the White House. And you see, I don't know if you remember this, after 9/11, they put the snipers on the White House.
Yeah, sure.
So all of a sudden,
you're on the rooftop.
I'm on the rooftop within their sights. I mean, I don't know how
looking like Bush in a suit.
In a suit. And Matt's holding a camera that looks like a gun in some way. I mean, we both, Matt and I, the whole trip, we were just in a certain state of abject paranoia that we were not going to leave alive. And I mean, sure enough, I mean, I remember looking over there, and I had to step over. There was this little fateful moment where I went from, they had an awning, and I had to step out from under the protection of the awning on that roof and be out just naked to the world and to the Secret Service snipers.
Yeah.
And I just saw them. And it's really creepy because they're all black, dressed on, and they just sort of creep along, you know?
Yeah. They're like stealth.
That's right.
Whatever. Oh. They're like, they're like Tom Cruise.
And then I turn my back. Real. To them, because I want the background, you see, be the White House. So now I had to, and I'm like, this could be it. I could be, I could take one, right? And I knew they wouldn't miss.
So let me ask you, when you did this particular video, did you have it all storyboarded out? I mean, in other words, how do you see this vision when you don't even know where you're going to shoot because you're doing it on the fly? So is it the idea is you shoot a whole lot of stuff and then you just got to edit together something that makes sense?
That's a great question. I had a vision for where I wanted to do. I had like the Capitol building shot, and then Matt, who's amazing, we would just, we'd work it out, the sort of the aesthetic thing. I knew, for instance, that I wanted to shoot in a baseball field because I just have that line. I say, you're batting 1,000, I say it as George Bush Sr. because I rap as him talking to Junior, saying, you've got the House, the Senate, now you've got the Supremes. You're batting 1,000, Junior. You're the king. And I wanted him to have a baseball bat and hit, the world, the little thing of the earth. And so I bought a little mini globe and I did some effects. So I knew I was going to shoot at a baseball field. Again, Ray's dad, amazing location. Location in this instance came before idea. He said, I can get us the Kennedy Center. I said, I don't care what we shoot there, we're shooting at the Kennedy Center. So people don't know, when people see that video and they see me in front of this giant red curtain, and if you really look at it, you look at the, sort of the ratio. I mean, the size aspect, it's ridiculous. I'm tiny because I'm literally, I am at the Kennedy Center standing on the stage, and it was beautiful.
So who let you in there?
Ray's dad had a friend.
Oh,
Ray's dad was... He was on the board of all of these places.
And he's a huge philanthropist, I'm sure.
Yes, huge philanthropist.
Gave a lot of money away and all that stuff.
When he bought his house, the property contained and ensnared a Frank Lloyd Wright house.
Wow.
Okay. Ray's dad, God bless him, he wasn't like an architectural enthusiast.
Yeah.
He just bought this house and there was this.
So what did he do?
Well, his first instinct, I think Ray would be fine with me telling you this because it's so Jim. He was like, we're going to take that down and build something else. And then, word got out to the Frank Lloyd Wright, protectionist.
Sure. Estate
and they got
whatever.
To him. Now, this is what is great about his dad, too. They got to him and they said, you know what? This is actually historically, culturally relevant. Sure. He was like, and he got all up to speed on Frank Lloyd Wright and educated himself about it. And he was a philanthropist, and he was a culturalist. That was the dichotomy of him.
And then
you could,
he tore it down.
You could easily...
No, what did he do? He had it moved?
No, hell no.
Well,
no.
What did he do?
Well, I was going to say, you could easily dismiss him and say, oh, no, he would surprise you. He not only did he not tear it down, he hired people to renovate it and restore it.
Yeah.
Restoration people who came in and made it look as good as it did the first day it was built, with furniture, and it's amazing.
Of the time period. I know how they do that. It's an amazing thing, but where is it now?
It's still there. You know, they...
So on Ray Kimsey's property...
Jim Kimsey,
Jim Kimsey, his son Ray, so it's his dad.
Yeah, yeah.
So on his dad's house on the property is a Frank Lloyd
Just happens to be
coffee.
A nice...
That
you know,
is the craziest thing
Just like
thing
in
I've
the parking
heard.
Garage where he has the Bentley limo, there just happens to be a Bentley and a
That's
thing.
That's the craziest thing I've ever heard.
You know what, man?
Wow.
Life was good. Life was good to him.
That's
know?
Amazing. Well, at good for him. There. So now, obviously, with the political environment as hot button as it is and how crazy in it, and obviously with social media, and now we all know so much more about politics, it seems like.
Yeah.
How have you not done a Trump parody, or have
you? A Trump parody. I have not done a Trump parody. I will be honest, you know, and this is coming from someone I've prided myself on I've gotten work as a voiceover artist off every president since I started in the business, and presidents who preceded my entry into the business, because sometimes you get projects like I played Jimmy Carter in something, and I've played Dick Cheney. Mm-hmm. So I've done that, but I don't have a great Donald Trump. I do an okay one.
Yeah, listen, and I can do the version that everyone does. You know, this is a great country, right? Am I right? We have a great country. It's a great, great day for America, but I don't think Stormy Daniels realizes I could crush you like a grape, you know.
You're so funny. That was perfect. Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding.
That was
I have
so
high
good.
Standards.
when you develop a character then, or you find somebody, is it somebody you want to do, or is it somebody requests you? Like, do you have an agent that says, hey, Chris, can you do a so-and-so?
Sometimes it's that. For voice matching, which is a really cool little niche part of the business, there will be actors who either they don't want to come and do their own ADR, where they replace their dialogue with either new lines, or there was sound on the day of shooting and they didn't get it clean, so they'll bring in people like me. So sometimes there'll be, like, I didn't know I could do Bradley Cooper until I got an audition to voice match Bradley Cooper.
Okay, I don't think
suddenly,
people
Well, the thing is, you probably don't know what Bradley Cooper sounds like, but this is what Bradley Cooper sounds like. I know, it's hard to be.
No, but I don't think anybody out there knows what you really just said.
No.
In other words, you have to go in and do ADR.
Replace his voice.
Because why can't Bradley Cooper go in?
Well, in the instance of Bradley Cooper, I think he was busy producing and editing the movie, and he was otherwise engaged and just didn't.
So it wasn't a big paragraph or anything, or a lot of dialogue.
No, it's little snippets.
Simple,
little
simple
snippets.
Things.
Yeah, you don't
so
go in.
Nobody
and,
would. But nobody's going to miss it. That's
the
my
idea.
Point.
The perfectly done job in that case is when nobody knows. And I've done a lot of it, and nobody knows.
Wow, I did not even know about that part of the industry. I honestly never heard of that.
It doesn't. It's not a big thing, and like I think it used to be even more of like a hush hush top secret thing. But like now in the day of like, you know, social media and Twitter, it's not like I don't get out. I don't do it at all. When I do a job, you won't know that I did it.
Yeah, sure. Of course.
And you know, but amongst my voiceover pals, we'll talk about it. And then I'll come on a show like this. I'll tell you that I did that. I don't, you know.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
That's what he does.
I love doing Bradley Cooper because he's very, you know, you can kind of just very quiet and just sort of, it's all
was
about
he
very
like that in Hangover too.
No, absolutely. It was very you know, like when he was in Silver Linings Playbook, he was just sort of, you know, I don't what do you want from me? Okay, I don't what are you saying? What do you want from me? What does this mean? You know,
wasn't he which movie was he in where he was the soldier?
Sniper.
Yeah,
American Sniper.
The American Sniper. Boy, that was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, and see in there, like if I had to voice match him for that would have been interesting because I would bring, and I've done this, I would bring in Bradley Cooper. I would bring in my Bradley Cooper, then I'd add a Texas accent on top of it, just to, you know, sort of keep it like in that same vein, but just add a Texas accent on top of it, you know. You got to add, but then you start going, all of a sudden, you start curving over, then you have Matthew McConaughey territory. You start saying, okay, all right, why is it JKO? That means just keep living, all right? That's what we do. If you're not living, you're not giving, all right?
Chris,
JKO.
You're so funny. You know who you remind me of? You remind me of Phil Hartman.
Phil Hartman. Oh, man.
I know, but listen, his talent. No, you match his talent. And I remember him being interviewed. He would do it just like you just did it, moving in and out of characters. That's stunning.
Thank you. It stopped me in my tracks. She said that name because it's still to this day. I remember that day.
Everybody remembers where they were.
Everybody remembers.
And that was 1997 or 98?
98.
And where were you?
I was in LA. It's not that I remember, I was in this seat. What I remember, interestingly enough, is I remember photographically, I remember the news story. I can see,
the footage of the house.
Yeah, I can see it.
We're talking
crazy.
About when Phil Hartman was murdered when by was his murdered. Wife.
His wife, Bryn.
She just blew his head off one night.
It was horrible.
While he was sleeping.
And there was, there was a buildup. They knew she was having troubles and he was a sweet guy. And I think he just didn't know how to deal with it. And
I still think about his children. I know that they went and moved with her sister, I think, in Michigan or Wisconsin. Like, they moved out of L.A.
It's like O.J.'s kids, you know? Like what happens to
what
them?
What happens?
You know, where did they go? I think they're in South Florida doing okay, is what I heard last.
All right, you guys, I got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. Let Chris know that you liked his story and tweet him over there on Twitter at Chris Cox Vox. See, now the more
Mix me up with the NRA guy.
The more I say that, the more I like it.
Chris Cox Vox?
Yeah, talk about a Dr. Seuss tale.
That's funny.
Will you tweet me at Chris Vox? No. Will you tweet me Cox Vox?
Will you treat me in a box? Will you tweet me at Chris Cox Vox? Will you treat me here or there? You will not tweet me anywhere. Is it a treat? Is it a tweet? I don't know. Smell my feet.
Hashtag Chris Cox.
Yes.
And join us next week on Storyworthy for Story Smash, the storytelling game show, live from the Hollywood Improv with Danny Zucker, Wendy Liebman, and Wayne Fetterman. Don't miss Story Smash next week on Storyworthy. Well, you know, I want to actually play a little bit of the song.
Sure. What's up, America? It's me, G to the WB, your president number 43, land of the brave and sort of kind of free, trying to keep it real up here in D.C. You feel that?
All right, you guys, I want to thank everybody over at Wondery Media, including Hernan Lopez and everybody on the Wondery team. And a big shout out to all the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors, you're supporting me. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And one more time, on behalf of the very talented Chris Cox, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was
amazing. My name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
He was a bad man. He had WMD. You don't mess around with the GWB. Now everyone's saying we're in a quagmire, saying I was wrong and calling me a liar. But I don't care, I don't need nobody. Iraq ain't my fault, the intelligence was cruddy. Well, go on, criticalizers, go on and judge. I got my spin doctors, MCs Limbaugh and Drudge. So deal with it, country, you all voted for us. Now check out my Republican base while I take it to the chorus. I'm a serious George. Some say a delirious George. Make me angry, I'm a furious George.